Hi, I'm Larry O'Moore, and you're listening to Roll for Initiative.
Correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com.
Roll for Initiative.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the RFI Podcast, issue number 29. That's right, the Roll for Initiative Podcast. 29 issues in the bag.
Guys, make sure you don't interrupt him during the intro.
Jason!
Not
this. As you can hear...
Well, I gotta take off my shirt. Hold on.
Oh, boy. Issue 29, Utter Chaos. It started well before the show, as you can hear. You have DM Vince here, along with DM Jason, DM Nick.
Hello!
And we have special guests in the background, two of them from the Dead Game Society, Michael and Colin. Don't say all hi at once, but, you know, take turns.
Hello.
I refuse.
All right.
That was Colin and Michael in respect. Right.
Thanks for clearing that up. Well, Labor Day is done. The sun's going away, and time to close up the pools, and time to go back to school, kiddies. But we have a special...
No.
Nick, be quiet. We have a special show for you this week. So let's head right into... What did we do this week? Jason, what did you do this weekend?
This weekend's still going on for me. I've been just... It's been all games all the time.
Woo!
Getting stuff kind of together from the Skype games we've been doing, preparing for a new in-person campaign that's starting. Had some new stuff come in from eBay just this weekend. A really nice mint box copy of Top Secret showed up this weekend, so it's been a busy weekend.
Awesome. And how's your actual play game going on Skype?
So let's see, we've got through a couple of sessions so far.
Awesome.
And of course they split the party.
Oh jeez. So,
split the party.
There has been the first confirmed kill.
Yay.
Well, that's what happens when you split the party, and so we're going to have to figure that one out a little bit. But yeah, they ended up getting separated. One of them's already been taken out by a few undead himself, but I think he's going to be okay. But the guy who got separated, it was tough. You know, it was just a tough one. So,
all right.
What cool. Can I say? It's a killer dungeon.
So yours should be up shortly on the new feed that you and I had put up.
Yeah, so why don't we tell everybody where to find that?
Okay, you can go to Facebook on our site, and there's a link on there that I put up for my actual play podcast, which is where Jason and I will be sharing. We're just going to split the feed so we can just have one feed for the two games. It'll just be marked differently for two games, and you can actually go there directly by going to feeds. No, it's feeds.feedburner.com/RFI actual play. And we'll get that on iTunes as soon as we can.
Yeah, but we'll have the link up on the site. So,
yeah.
You know, this stuff's not going to go through our regular feed because we don't want to clog up the pipes with what really has just some people interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you can definitely go and download them and check them out. And you can write to us and tell us which rules we got wrong while we were playing.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Kind of stuff.
I did
actually. Part of my weekend has been spent sitting, going back through the past couple of sessions and making notes about what rule I think I screwed up so that I get it right next time.
I already know. I did a prelude for my episode with two players, and I already know what mistake I made because they were using scrolls, and I didn't have the magic user roll his percentage to read scrolls.
Oh,
I totally forgot about that, and I realized it after the podcast. So you guys can listen. Go there and listen and then write an email and yell at me. So, whatever. I don't care. Nick, what'd you do this weekend?
Well, let's see. Had a cut to experience basically playing Rednecks and Hillbilly, the live-action role-playing game.
Awesome.
By going to a private campground this whole weekend from Friday up until today. So, like, every redneck and hillbilly was there. It's like, I'm like, oh,
it just took
it's
me a
Redneck
second.
The LARP.
I was trying to think what game you were playing. You were playing Redneck the LARP.
It was like Redneck the LARP. Like, it got a little scary on the first night, but, you know, there are some things that just should not be mentioned. But some, like, on the real gaming, yeah, on the real gaming scene, I've finally come up with a great new campaign idea that I'm going to unleash on my players, hopefully in the next couple of months. Someone had a thread going on in dragonsfoot.org on a concept for a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say that in this particular campaign, somehow evil wins.
Good. I know, and at least one of the players in my campaign would be eager to play in that. I forget which guy's playing our cleric, but I think he loves to play evil clerics. So,
well, it's not that respect that the people are going to be, the players are going to be playing evil characters. It's that they are one of the last bastions of good in the whole world.
And
they're
cool.
trying to eke out their they're gonna try to exist and maybe create more good in the world in a place where evil has taken over. So, kind of reversing the whole thing here. It's gonna be very interesting. So okay. I'm really excited about it. I got a whole bunch of notes on that I've put into one of the forums there at Dragon's Foot, and like a whole timeline and a map and everything. So I'm really excited about it.
Awesome.
And Vince and I have been managing our games through Epic Words. We're going to be talking to Jonathan from Epic Words on an upcoming show. Yep. But you should definitely check it out as far as like storing your maps and keeping all that stuff for your players.
Yeah. It's really good. Yeah, I'm trying to make sure I don't give too much away, because I know a couple of my players in the group listen to the podcast here, so I'm not going to give away too many details. It's just how they're going to get to this point is going to be quite interesting. So,
on the topic of the games that we're running, everything, I had a note to myself. I wanted to kind of remind the listeners, and you know, people have been on the Facebook page talking about you know, different games, and I really wanted to encourage our listeners to, if anybody is running Skype games or recording their games, to put them up, and we'll talk about who's putting their games up for people to hear.
Oh, yeah.
And not just AD&D games. I mean, if anybody out there is going to run a Skype game for, you know, anything really, you know, kind of old school and fun, whether it's, you know, Gamma World or Top Secret or Boot Hill or Star Frontier. I don't know how you do Star Frontiers over Skype, but, you know, those kind of things.
It's possible.
I don't know, Michael, Colin, if you guys, I know you have play-by-post games on your forums. I don't know if you guys do Skype games.
Not yet.
Go ahead,
Michael. Oh, well, I'll go ahead then. No, we haven't tried any Skype games, but we're about to try the D20 in conjunction with Skype, basically running, you can really run anything.
That's
on that.
D20 Pro, you mean?
D20 Pro, what did I call it?
D20.
D20 Pro, okay. And so we're going to try it out. I think we're going to try to get our first game up next weekend. I'll be in Disney after the next weekend. So we're going to try that out, and it's great because, you know, you can use the map function, you can use the die roller if you want to, or the using the miniatures and that stuff like that. It's designed for D20, but if you don't want to use all that stuff, you can certainly run any game on there.
Yeah, we will. That sounds cool.
It's going to be a blast. We're also starting to run games at our local our gaming store, Games Plus in Mount Prospect. So we're going to have a dead game every once a month there to get people interested in our area about playing these dead games.
Very cool.
We were using my campaign, we were using Gamer Table. I actually downloaded it and went through with that. And it was very easy to do macros and use the miniatures, like POGs they call them, and the map. So we had a lot of fun. I was using all the rolls on that for my game.
I think you should definitely do an upcoming show that's all about online tools.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
There's so many cool things out there. It'd be good if we reviewed a bunch of them. I know we've had a lot of people asking about it. So just one last thing I wanted to say around the Facebook site.
Yeah.
We are now at 402 fans.
Ooh, yeah.
So I want to thank people who have signed up and liked us or friended or fanned or whatever.
Yeah,
I'd like to thank all the little people.
I was going to give a shout out to the person who was number 400, but two things happened. One, it was actually Colin or Michael.
Yeah.
And two, I realize that I don't actually know how to tell when somebody's the latest one on Facebook. So I figure I'm just going to say hello to Dennis Quinn and to T.R. Trensalier, however you say his name, since they commented and wanted to feel, you know, they're like, why aren't we special? You are special, you guys. You are really special.
Yes.
We're just,
you rock.
Kyle and I are less special now. Thanks.
No.
Wow. All right. Let's head into Sage Advice so we can get going on with all this knick-knack and stuff.
Sage Advice.
All right, Sage Advice this week. Let's start off with Pimpin' for Stars. Nick, were there any comments this week?
Yeah, we sure did. We got over on iTunes. We got on August 26th from Chef Deadpool. Yeah.
Nice.
Love the character Deadpool. He's awesome.
Yeah.
Gave us 5 stars, so thank you, Chef Deadpool. And he comments on saying, another great one, guys. So much great material that got me back into playing first edition AD&D.
Yay.
So he's talking about, he's got the Orange Spines books mm-hmm. there, so from like 83. And he said, thank you very much for the needed exercise. Especially love the creature features. They are beyond helpful. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Chef Deadpool, and hope you spread the word and continue listening.
You know, just the thing on the creature features, I thought that we were doing something different from Dragon Magazine because they used to call it like Ecology of and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was reading the early Dragon Magazines and Strategic Review newsletters, and they called it Creature Feature back then.
No kidding.
Hey, but we're Creature Feature Theater.
Oh, well, yeah. Then that's totally different.
We're totally different, dude.
And I'm liking how we're doing the new format, how 1 week we actually do the whole encounter, and then the next time we talk about, you know, ways of using this creature and the ecology of it and all that. And it seems like a lot of people are enjoying that format, too. So
yeah, I think it's working out.
Yep.
Sweet. Okay, Jason, time for you to step up and talk a little bit more about the low-tech con. People were questioning that, so.
Yes.
You won.
RetroCon.
I had a...
RetroCon,
you, Michael. If anybody, stop it. Just stop it. That's not what it's called. You know,
in the next segment,
and if you try to go to that convention, it won't be open. All right. So, but before I did, there was a couple of comments that I particularly wanted to call out from the site. This first one here was from Chuck.
Oh.
This is coming from our last show because I thought it would be, you know, we don't need to revisit, of course, you know, the cleric stuff, but it was good. Great show, guys. Love the differing views on cleric weapons you guys have. I want to say Jason is wrong.
Blasphemy.
But I can't, since these are not rules, but guidelines. And if you want to stick with the book's guidelines, there's nothing wrong with that at all. Now, if you'll have to excuse me, I have to go watch a ton of D&D videos I didn't know existed. Thanks for the wasted day.
You must be talking about Record of Lotus War.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anyways, there was a lot of comments around that, and I think I put, you know, some notes up on the site that this is an argument that goes back about as far as clerics have existed in the game. So if anybody wants, you know, we put some notes up of old articles, you can find the same argument going on 20 years ago. So keep it up and keep arguing.
Yeah.
So what was it? What was it you were going to ask me to talk about?
RetroCon.
RetroCon, yes. Low tech con, Jason. Go ahead.
Low tech con.
Hi.
All right, I'll stop.
Go to lowtechcon.com, put in your email address, and whenever Jason updates something in the near 10 years, you'll get something.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess we're committed to it now. Low tech con, lowtechcon.com is the site. It's, like you just said, it's just a place to fill in your email right now. If you are a volunteer or a staff member, there is a separate site, and I'll let you guys know kind of the inside password protected area where you can go to. But it looks like we're going to work together with Dead Game Society to make this a success.
Yay!
And we just have to figure out when and where. So, guys, whoever's listening to the show, please go to the RFIpodcast.com website. There's a poll where you can vote for the dates that you think are the best, or you could even say, I don't care and I don't want to go. That's legitimate. And, you know, let us know when you think would be a good time for it. We're going to figure out the place and all that stuff. What we know for a fact is that it's going to be old school gaming. We're going to be playing dead games. We're going to be playing out of print games. We're going to be playing retro clones. We're going to be playing possibly some, if there are independent publishers that are working today, putting out new stuff that is in the spirit of the old school, I think that's legitimate. And we're also going to have a little bit of computer and video gaming, but it's going to be computers that came out, such as the Apple II, Commodore 64, VIC-20, TI-99.
Oh, nice.
TRS-80, you know, the real old school before.
Trash 80s, yes.
Yep.
Odyssey.
Oh my god, yes.
Yep, so for video games, we'll have stuff like the Magnavox Odyssey 2 and Odyssey 1, if we can dig one up. You know, Atari 2600, even the Atari 7800 and 5600.
What about the Tandy from Radio Shack?
Tandy 1000.
Yeah.
Intellivision would be good. Intellivision.
Absolutely, Intellivision. Vectrex. I've got my own Vectrex that I'll be bringing
down. ColecoVision. ColecoVision.
Yeah, okay. ColecoVision.
So
all of that stuff, anything that happened before the Nintendo Entertainment System came out.
Oh, wait a minute. I got a really good idea for this. If someone out there brings an Atari 2600, you have to bring...
California Games.
The most demonized game on the 2600. E.T. Exactly.
E.T.
Hold on, let me go into my 70s room.
E.T. Tournament. Okay, so yeah, that's the other thing. Michael's going to be setting up his 70s room at the convention.
We'll talk about that in a few minutes, though.
Okay.
So, Jason, you and I have been working on the site a little bit, and we were trying to do some forums because some people were asking where we hang out the most.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's been a little bit of a thing because we hang out all over the place. You know, we're on Facebook, we're on Dragon's Foot, we're on D20 Radio forums, we're on the RFI podcast forums. There's a lot of different places that you can go to talk. And, you know, totally legitimate. You can still go to any of those places. We're still going to be at all those places, but we're going to try to consolidate a little bit and get the RFI forums working as well as we can.
Yeah.
So we're playing around behind the scenes right now with the technical solutions a little bit. We'll have a good one in place this week and, you know, just kind of encourage people to go there and talk about things. We'll set up a forum for the, what do you call it, for the convention, for Low Tech Con.
Yes.
And then we'll also set up a forum for something we're going to talk about next week, but we can announce this week. And that's that RFI, Roll for Initiative Podcast, is going to be making its own Dungeon Master screen.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, yeah.
That'll be nice.
Yeah, so we're working on the artwork right now. So it'll be, you know, it'll be in the spirit of the old screen. It'll look like the old first Goldenrod screen with a little bit of RFI flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to take away all the tables that we think just you don't really need to have in a combat or gameplay situation. Stuff like perhaps knowing how many experience points you need to get from level 4 to 5 and what your title is going to be. You can figure that out from the book. And try to focus on the stuff that people are always flipping through the pages looking for.
I know so, one thing not to have on there.
What's that?
Psionics.
Well, not necessarily. See, this is a good point. And we'll talk about it next week some more, but I had been thinking we may even do some little mini screens. So we'll have the main, you know, two trifold screens. And there's been a few good projects out there I've seen on N-World and Dragon's Foot.
You want to do a two trifold screen? You want to copy like the original ones, huh?
Yeah, yeah. We'll be doing the original ones.
Oh, okay. But, I misunderstood what we talked about.
Yeah, these will be professionally printed. You know, these will actually be something that you can purchase and just buy it and it'll be there. But so we'll do the trifold screens, and there's been a lot of good discussions over the years about how to do the screen. So we're hoping that listeners will write in with those kind of ideas, say this is what they'd like to see.
Okay, cool.
But we might do little like kind of side ones. So for those things that don't come up that often, that are optional rules, whatever, maybe we'll do just little extra laminated sheets or mini screens or something.
You should do player screens. Those went over well for second edition.
That's a good idea. There's actually player screens in first edition. I have one right here, as a matter of fact.
What
maybe that's what I was thinking about first edition.
Yeah.
Well, it was a second printing. It was after they switched over to the more unified artwork when they went to the orange spine and everything.
Oh, okay. I'm going over my shelves right now.
Yeah, okay. I'm actually looking
so let's,
at it.
Let's
right
actually talk about that next week, guys. Next week. Save something for next week, and let's actually talk about the articles that were posted on our site.
Okay.
We had one by Todd Hughes, his plus two to save. He had a contest, Jason. We were talking about that earlier, and he wanted us to yell it out to everybody. I didn't have a chance to read the contest part.
Oh, it's a good one. It's a really good one. So his article is called A Book by Its Cover. It's a really cool article about an artifact that in this case is a spell book. And at the end of the article, he has a contest where he would like to have people submit monster designs.
Mm-hmm.
So Todd is working right now on a new module, and I think he's calling the module the Looking Glass, or maybe that's the name of the end of his article. Sorry, Todd, if I'm mixing those two up. But anyways, he's looking for people to send in a monster between levels 1 to 3, and something that would be comfortable living underground, write it up in the sort of standard monster manual format. It needs to be an actual new monster and not be undead. So, because that wasn't fit. Well, it doesn't fit with the module he's writing. There's no undead. So write the monster up, send it to Todd Hughes, and I guess, oh, here we go. Send it to W. Hughes, W-H-U-G-H-E-S, at ptatech.com. And we'll put that in the show notes as well.
Okay, yeah, you can get that directly from the site, or you can send it to us, rfistaff@gmail.com, and we'll just forward it to him directly if you forget the email address. Okay. And I also put up an article about the Record of Lodoros War, some history on that. For some reason, the Japanese didn't come out on the site. I don't know why. I have to go. Someone pointed that out to me. It was all just question marks. I was like, huh?
Yeah, that's just part of the translator. It goes, what?
Yeah, I wrote it all up, and I was like, I double-checked the Japanese. I talked to my friend in Japan. He looked it over. He gave me the double thumbs up. I put it all up, and I was like, question mark. I'm like, oh!
Oh, that's a shame. Yeah, it's probably because of the software that we use to build the site, but we'll figure that out.
When you're talking to Record of Lotus War, I thought somebody somewhere came up with stats for the characters.
They did. That is on Dragon's Foot.
It is?
Yeah, it is. Okay. It's in the it's in the classic forums. So because someone made it up for classic D&D.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I saw it the other day.
We should definitely go and link that on the article.
Yeah, I just saw it just the other day. I was going to do that, and I forgot. Thanks for reminding me.
Nice.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, that'll end Sage Advice, unless we have anything else, guys. No? Yes? No.
Yeah.
No. We'll head into our featured guest spotlight segment, a new segment. Dead Game Society. Why don't you guys, well, one of you, Michael or Colin, step up and tell us a little bit about Dead Game Society, how it was created, and what it's about.
Colin, would you like to do that? And I'll chime in when you get things wrong.
Sure, that sounds good. The Dead Game Society basically is a group of gaming enthusiasts and collectors. We kind of fired up the DGS a few years back after Gen Con, when we realized, you know, that there wasn't a whole lot, at least back then, of you know, kind of classic, out of print, old school games that were offered at the convention. And one thing led to another. After deciding that we wanted to run our own games, we tried to start up a group basically that would promote convention play of, you know, old school, out of print games, not just D&D and AD&D, but many other games, D6 games, you know, MERPs and GURPS, or, you know, whatever might be out there. That people would want to play, and then promote the creation of original material, you know, fan-based material, and even beyond the printed word, you know, stuff, videos, or and anything that people basically want to do. It's been pretty good. It's been around for a few years now. We have, I think there's like 100 people now on our message boards, and we ran, I think, about... how many games did we run at Gen Con this year, Michael? Do you remember?
Over 12 or 14 or 16. I ran 3.
Wow.
And then I said, that's it. I was spent.
Yeah, I think the total was more like 20. When
was it
when,
altogether?
Yeah, when everything was
that's
said.
Impressive. That is very impressive.
Well, so, you forget they had 56 people running the game, so.
Yeah, we had our own little army, like the Kiss.
Now, how many people actually came to Gen Con from your group?
We had about, I think, eight.
Eight people, yeah.
Yeah, I think we had about eight, and most of us are from around the kind of the Chicago area, but we have some kind of, you know, members that are in other states, Louisiana and you know, out east, people that kind of contribute. So we try to get as many people to the conventions as we can.
Right. We had Chad, which is a founding member. He ran six games himself.
Wow.
He was like a machine. Wow. It was just crazy.
That's busy.
Like it was crazy.
Like yeah, and he was not just phoning it in either. I mean,
no,
I played in one
guy.
Of his games, and it was he barung it.
Yeah, I phone it in. I mean, I wear costumes to deflect the how bad I am at running games, but this guy is the real deal. And Colin's really good at running games as well. He doesn't need costumes or makeup, you know, to, you know, push up his position. Now I do.
But I mean, that's a big thing about the Dead Game Society. Whenever anybody runs into you guys at a convention, you don't just come to run the games. I mean, you come fully prepared. You've got your costumes. You've got a lot of the things that you make. So one of your emails or nicknames is actually Maker of Things.
Yeah, that's me. I make things. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, thanks for the T-shirt. Appreciate that.
Oh, okay. You're welcome. I painted that T-shirt myself by hand. I did like 80 of them.
It was carved out of a single block of wood.
I'm impressed.
I know. That's why it's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Now, some people say that people print these at shops or something? I don't know. I'd like doing it all by hand.
That's just crazy talk.
But the rings are carved out of blocks of wood, right?
Well, car rings are gaming. They're all plastic, so.
Actually, that segues into something good. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the Power Ring, how that came about, and the actual logo on the Power Ring, the skull that everybody always asks about, what does that mean and everything?
Oh, yeah. Well, our mascot, his name is Vincent, after
me?
Vincent Van Price.
Oh, not me?
No, Vincent Price.
Oh, okay.
And originally, when we first came up with the idea, like I said, it was at Gen Con. And, you know, really for me, the reason I wanted to start this was back in the day, I didn't really get to play these games. I was too busy, you know, dating and, you know, having fun. Because I don't know if people realize
that's hilarious.
Yes, I'm an extremely good looking guy. And so I had other things to do.
He covers up with sarcasm.
But anyway, and so for me, developing this club was more of a selfish thing. So now I get to play these games that I didn't get to when I was, you know, younger. But
yeah, it's a bit different for me, Chad and myself. I'm pretty much the kind of old school gamer of the group. I actually, my first Gen Con was, I think it was Gen Con 13 in 1980. So I've been doing it for a while.
Well, anyway, so during the convention, you know, we were talking about all the things we want to do for it. And, you know, I said, well, you know, we should have, like, rings. Like, every member should have a ring so we could, like, you know, be like the Pope. And
Or like
so
the Wonder Twins.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I developed these rings.
For the Wonder
and,
Pope.
Yeah. And every, you know, the rings have, like, little slots on the side. So every game you play with us, you get a new die. So after you get six of them, you get, like, a free gift. Like, you'll probably get, like, a Stormtrooper helmet or something like that.
Can we get the Pope's hat?
Yeah, or the Pope's hat. I haven't made those yet. So we're always trying to come up with new things. Like, next year we'll have the Vincent, which will be a convention award that someone will win who, you know, was, like, the best role player in one of our DGS games. So we'll have a contest for those type of things. So we're always thinking of new items to give out.
Like, I know what you guys can do. You can, like, give, like, a wig out for the best William Shatner death.
Oh, that would be awesome. Well, it was funny because this year we ran a Star Trek game, and, of course, you know, Colin and I were dressed up as Star Trek, you know, people, and we made T-shirts and the Star Trek logo for the shirts with the Vincent head in there, and we had one guy do his Spock, and he was, like, dead on. You know, he had the shirt on, and we gave him the ears, and the guy went to town. It was just incredible. And that's what we're trying to bring to these games, that spirit of fun and acting and just enjoying it. Instead, it's not just rolling dice. It's about, you know, personas and having fun. So that's why I like dressing up. You know, I dressed up as Tony Stark.
Yeah, when you came, 70. When you were in the RAM wearing that, I honestly didn't recognize you for a minute. I just had no idea. I hope you took my advice and you ended up actually growing that pencil mustache.
You know, I was thinking about it, but I don't know if my wife will let me. Because I look like John Waters, and I don't know if I need to do that yet.
What's that? Ooh. It's Clark Gable.
Yeah.
Or perhaps Tony Stark.
I'll do a Tony Stark. Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, so, and that's what I enjoy about playing these games, you know, really getting into the characters and fun stuff like that. And so we're hoping we start some type of, you know, movement where people, you know, they'll expect nothing less than that.
Like,
especially for a dead game.
Like RetroCon. I mean, Low Tech Con.
Yeah, Low Tech Con.
So,
which we will be bringing the Dead Game Society to Low Tech Con.
Jason
and
is right now trying to figure out how he can reach through the interwebs and punch you in the face.
Yeah, I know.
So the Low Tech Con, I mean, basically the way I see it is Dead Game Society isn't going to be, you know, just kind of showing up and you know, appearing or whatever. This is going to be sort of a joint effort as far as I'm concerned.
It's like a We Are the World thing, hand in hand.
Because we've got... we're hoping, you know, we're hoping maybe, you know, what we can get 200, 250 people, something like that. And I don't think this needs to be anything where we worry too much about who put their stamp on there. The point is that it's got to be something that everybody kind of comes together and does together.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of like, what do they call them? The unconferences, you know, if you've been to like bar camp or foobar camp or anything like that. So, you know, that's the way I want to see this. Is this is something that we're going to be doing together because it's all the same spirit of stuff.
Right? Yeah, I think it should be like a super group. You know, like Toto or Asia.
Super friends.
Is Toto a super group, or were they just really good?
No, Asia is, but Toto is not.
How about super
Yeah, they're kind of like Survivor in that they're just great. They're not really a super group. They're just an awesome group.
We can't be like the super friends
like,
from Saturday morning.
Like Kiss. Well,
right.
I will be bringing the 70s room. I got to figure out how to pack up my room, and we're going to have a 70s room.
Vincent mentioned something about your 70s room. I'd like to hear a little bit about that.
Well, I developed a room I actually built into my basement. It's a 4x4 room with a window and, you know, and
4x4?
A picture. I mean, I'm sorry, 8x8.
It's 4x4 small.
I've seen the pictures. It's not that small.
No, it's 8x8. And basically what I try to do is recreate my bedroom as a child, you know, here today. And so basically, you know, I have all, you know, the retro curtains and all the toys and the magazines and everything. And I have about probably about 17 different themes now. Right now it's the Peanuts. I just switched out. It was the Bionic Man room. You know, it has the curtains and everything like that. But that's basically what it is. And you go in there, and I got a vintage TV that will play vintage broadcasts, TV shows with original commercials that I buy and play. The radio is set up to play vintage broadcasts from WLS radio from, you know, 1970 to about 78,
wow.
where I have the sound check. So it really, when you go in there, it's a full immersion. If you once you close the door, it might as well be 1975 or 77 or 78.
Wow.
So, yeah, if you go to my70sroom.com, there's pictures and I'm
still
developing.
Is that with a number or is it spelled out?
With the number, yeah.
Okay, my70sroom.com.
Yeah, and it's just a lot of fun. And I encourage everyone, now even if you grew up in the 80s, then you need to make My 80s Room to, you know, just get back to your childhood in many ways. So, for me, it's just fun. It's a hobby. It keeps me out of the strip clubs and the bars.
Keeps you off.
That's how I say to my wife about my man cave. I'm like, hey.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We'll figure out some way to get this, you know, at the convention.
I just need a van. I just got to load up all the furniture and all the gear, and then it will, you know, to be the 70s, and it's perfect for low-tech com.
Well, here you go. If it's 70s, you know, you got to have the, the custom van with the shag carpet inside. So.
Wouldn't that be nice? I just picked up some nice, beautiful red shag carpet for my 70s room. It's beautiful.
You know, for Low Tech Con, too, I need to figure out a way to, I think I need to rent out a semi because I have to figure out a way to get the Enyaq out of my garage.
The what? Get the what out of your garage?
He's got
an Enyaq.
Yeah, the original computer.
Yeah, geez.
Oh, ENIAC.
Oh, did I pronounce it wrong?
I knew what you were talking about.
I didn't know what the heck you were talking about. You could have said UNIVAC. That could have worked.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's when I fire it up, it blacks out the entire neighborhood.
Oh, it would. Yeah, it would.
Nice. We went to.
You would. Lines going to my garage.
Yeah, if anybody wants
to
bring
the square root of pi and blacks out my neighborhood.
We went to actually look at a couple houses, me and my wife, a couple weeks back, and we saw a house that had orange shag carpeting still in the main living room.
That was our house.
And that's the Nick's house. And they had a Rambler in the driveway, so.
Nice.
See, wow.
Those people. See, my 70s house is my next step. I want to buy a house and just turn it vintage 70s before I die, because I'm getting old.
I've always wanted to, and I'm still want to, eventually buy enough land out west to start a new town, so we could do my 70s town.
There you go. That'll be perfect.
That sounds kind of creepy.
No, it's not creepy.
Well, kind of going with this whole retro thing here. So right now I'm looking at the Dead Game Society website and all the different games that you're supporting that are out of print. And
so far, yeah.
Just to let everybody know, it's not just like out of print TSR stuff. I mean, it's other games too.
Yeah.
So
yeah, all different types of games.
Yeah, we tend to focus a little bit. Well, I focus a little bit on TSR, but yeah, we do basically any type of game. I mean, we're waiting for 4.0 to die so we can start playing that as well.
Yeah. Well, guess what?
I'm sorry.
Guess what? You're in luck because 4.5 is just about to hit the shelves.
Oh, I can't wait.
Seriously?
Yeah, it's called D&D Essentials. I just found that's that new red box
that's
coming
4.5.
out.
That's just that's just an intro to 4.0.
They're calling it 4.5. 4.5? Yeah, they're calling it 4.5 now.
Well, whatever.
Oh god.
And yeah. Okay, I admit I buy that crap. I do it because I have money to spend, and
but you buy everything.
Yes, I almost bought that Evel Knievel jumpsuit. Oh my god!
Jeez.
It was like
You know, one game I see on the website here that I do have some very fond memories is Fast's Star Trek.
Yeah,
and that's what we ran. Yeah,
I did.
Yeah, we ran.
I noticed there was no logo on there for Kill Puppies for Satan.
Not yet. I'm working on it. Okay. I don't know how to work Vincent into it unless I just put some devil horns on him.
You might want to do that.
Cheap.
I don't know what also Star Trek is. I'm a blasphemer, but I don't even know the game.
Really? Star Trek is fun.
It's
yeah.
a D10
The fastest Star Trek is really cool. Probably
the best one
of the best supplements for that is the Triangle Campaign.
Yeah, that doesn't tell me anything about what fastest Star Trek is.
Yeah,
It's
a really good system. I remember
it's
that.
It's a really good system.
It was a D10 based percentile system, wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one of the cool things, at least I recall from it, is they built up the whole galaxy of of Star Trek to where it doesn't necessarily encourage the players to play all the play Kirk or McCoy or whoever. You can make out your own characters and carve out your own little your whole little thing. I mean, you can play the original characters if you wanted to, but
yeah, you can.
I just thought it was a really, especially when it came out with the supplement for the Triangle Campaign, where you can go into this area called the Triangle, which is like between the Federation and the Romulans and the Klingons, where it's almost like a Wild West kind of area. So
I mean, how does it is it in any way related to, compatible with, similar to Starfleet battles at all?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
No,
I think it's quite a bit different. It's
it's
a little bit like I say a little bit. It's a little bit like Top Secret SI.
Okay.
The game system, but it's not to get too technical. It's you have like X number of movements that you can do in a round based on your action points.
Yeah.
So it's highly granular, and it takes a little bit to get your head around. It's
so that's how it's like SI, is because of the granularity.
Yeah, but even more so than SI. It's probably the most granular game out there. One of them.
So I mean, this is going to be a really good thing when you guys get your own podcast started, which hopefully is going to be soon, and we'll announce it here when you do.
Yes, we will.
You guys will be talking about this sort of stuff, bringing up different games on different shows and all that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's cool.
And that's why we're working with Jason and Vincent on that as well, to get our own podcast. It'll be a lot of fun. It will be like mini celebrities like you guys are.
I'm very short.
Jason's actually 3'7". He was just wearing stilts when you met him, so.
Really?
Yeah. He does a good job concealing them.
I'm actually the tallest. I'm 4'2".
Nick is actually the tallest. Yeah.
But of the list of games that you guys have on here, let's actually run down what you have on the site so far. You've got Dungeons and Dragons, of course.
Yeah.
Let me check my site. Hold on.
Yeah, Buck Rogers, Top Secret. It says Top Secret SI. I assume that means both for you.
Yeah.
Just Top Secret SI.
Oh, we play both, so.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Gamma World, of course.
Yeah.
Star Wars D6 and D20. Indiana Jones, Call of Cthulhu, Marvel Super Heroes, Boot Hill, Star Trek FASA.
I got a question on one of those.
Yeah.
See, Call of Cthulhu isn't really a dead game. Are you just talking just version. Previous edition?
Well,
just
D20.
D20's dead, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We cheat a little bit. Pay like 5.6.
No, I don't cheat at all. I pick D20 because that is a dead game. Those other people part of this group, they like to blur the lines. I don't.
And Dead Game Society is actually going to be coming out with a Call of Cthulhu game.
But that's secret.
Are you,
guys,
are you ready?
Yeah, that's nobody, a surprise for GaryCon.
Nobody knows about it, so we could bleep that out if you want.
Yeah, no, you don't have to. We won't go into great detail, but yeah, Colin is writing a supplemental Call of Cthulhu, something we're both interested in. I'll be doing the artwork and contributing the first module. So yeah, it's one thing we're really looking forward to unveiling.
Jeez, or unraveling, depending on how it goes. You
know, it's the coffee. It's the coffee pocket.
But it'll be cool. There's going to be a lot of, from what I've seen, actual games and things. You guys are actually game designers as well. So
we're trying to be, it just gives me an excuse to make more stuff, sculpt and cast and all that fun stuff. So really that's all what it's about.
Okay.
And if other people come and join the Dead Game Society,
speaking of which,
in terms of that, I mean, are you going to be adding more games to the site as people start running? Absolutely. How's that going to work?
We play a lot more games besides those ones that are there. I mean, like at Gen Con, I even went so far as to play Hercules and Xena.
Oh, yeah.
They're good games,
I don't think that had ever been played at any convention anywhere.
And so, then Chad, Chad played Amber, so.
Yeah, Amber and DC Heroes, and all sorts of stuff. So.
I just ran three games for them at a local convention also. I just ran a classic D&D game, a first edition D&D game, and I run one that they don't have on their site, Buffy the Vampire Slayer game. So.
Nice. Yeah, we were supposed to have a Buffy game. I think we did have a Buffy game.
I thought we did. Someone ran a Buffy game.
Yes, somebody did run it. One of our DGS guys ran it, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Awesome.
Cool.
So,
yeah, we're hoping next year we'll have more.
Michael, tell us.
I just had a question. I had a question. I think on a broader thing when we were talking about the quote-unquote dead games here, it kind of goes into this, what's been going on for the past 5-10 years right now with this old school gaming renaissance that's been going on. What's your guy, either Colin or Michael, what's your take on some of these retro clones like Osric or Swords and Wizardry? And, what do you think of them? How that all fits in with, maybe something that Dead Game Society might want to support? I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, we actually, I played in some of that, Osric games and Labyrinth Lord when I was at Gen Con. And I mean, I love the stuff. I mean, I think it's great. And I actually really do support it. I go to the Targa site and everything and talk to those guys all the time. So I'm really enthusiastic about it. I mean, I think it's really neat. It's kind of a return to fundamentals, return to the original idea of role-playing game. And I really like it. I think some of the materials are terrific. I actually have a lot of the hard copy, the Osric book and the Labyrinth Lord and some of this other stuff. I mean, I think it's terrific. So,
cool.
I wonder if I haven't gone back to look at the GaryCon list of events recently, but I wonder if people are going to be running any of the retro clones at GaryCon.
I hope so.
I think they did last year.
Oh, good.
Oh, they did. Yeah, yeah.
There were like one or two games last year. I didn't get a chance to, because I was so busy running games, I didn't get a chance to play in them. But I think a couple guys did.
You know, it's funny. I was reading some old, some really old Dragon magazines at breakfast this morning, and I think it was number 20 or something. I didn't take a bunch of actual Dragon magazines to a diner. I took my iPad and read them there, so I don't mess up the originals. But yeah, I'm really helping this. I'm not a geek business, huh?
Yeah, really.
But I can't find the article, but it was somewhere around like number 20. It was sometime back in the 70s, and somebody had done an article where they were talking about people were complaining about how D&D was just changing so much, and there's this new AD&D thing. Ugh. And look, when you had chainmail, you had two classes. If you hit somebody, you killed them. And now we have all of this crazy stuff going on. And it was just really fun to go back and look at that, people talking about, well, I remember when it was the original gaming, you know, even then. The guy who wrote the article was saying that one guy, he had written this saying, everybody's sort of accepting Gary Gygax's the final word on things right now. And he was talking about somebody who he had run into who hadn't done that, who was running his D&D game by taking the basic chainmail rules. And he had read some of the whatever the wood box or white box instructions at one point, but he never bought it, so he just based his game on what he remembered from reading the rules one time.
Hmm. You know, like a Rain Man?
Something like that.
Well, you know, Jason, you bring up a really good point about, and I, what you're really saying is like how more things change, the more things stay the same. Yeah. And it's funny how and you're probably talking like late 70s, early 80s in that article.
Yeah, and I think it was around 1977.
Right, and they're talking about, oh, now they get this advanced Dungeons & Dragons coming out now. What the heck are these kids doing nowadays? Blah, 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 blah. And, yeah. I'm thinking now, you know, yeah, there was that kind of banter and debate going on then, but I think the difference is now than it was then is, yes, then you had the echo chamber of the gaming community. It's now the echo chamber is now larger.
it's got the internet.
Exactly, because you got the internet. And yes, it's still an echo chamber, but it's just gotten bigger. And news travels faster than that. Because I think even then, you know, when I got into it in 81, I don't even think I was aware of, you know, or didn't even care about the differences. I was just playing and having a good time.
Yeah.
You know? So I think it's just, like I said, I think you could just see it more prevalent in the gaming community because of things like the internet and forums and blogs where the news travels quicker, but it's still, yeah, it's just a larger echo chamber. So it's a very interesting point, Jason. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. The thing I dig about everything that Dead Game Society is doing with the games that are being played is that it's kind of twofold. I mean, sure, there's games in there that I specifically either have nostalgia for or I actually think are just kind of, I don't want to say superior, but more to my taste, you know, because my taste tends to run a little bit more to the DIY and everybody kind of doing it together as opposed to some big corporation that, you know, hands it down. But But the other thing is just there's so many people who have a favorite game that they've been playing for years, or maybe they haven't had a chance to play in years, and to be able to have some kind of forum that they can go to and a central place to go and look for other people that are playing whatever their game is.
Right.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people will try to emulate sites for that. So let's all go to Dead Game Society and hook up there.
Yeah, that sounds good. I think they're the best to go with.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you tell us how to get there?
Yeah, and ironically enough, I think you're right.
Michael, no, tell us how to get there and what they get for joining. Can they just join, or do they have to jump through a hoop? Or
no, all they have to do is join.
There's a secret initiation? Or
yeah.
Well, if you send... Well, there's a paddle we have, but that's different.
Oh.
Basically, they just have to sign up the forms, you know, and then they can be part of that. But to just join, send me your picture, and I will make a special card for you for our wall. I'm a little behind. I need to put more pictures up. And basically, that's it. And then what we want to encourage is to have as many people wanting to run these games. So when we hit another Gen Con or Gary Con or Origins or whatever, is that we have like maybe 20 different DMs running under Dead Games and running old TSR games or whatever, and you know, and be able to give out T-shirts and power rings of gaming and just fun stuff.
I'll tell you what, you talk about Origins, which is the other really big con that is around besides Gen Con, and that's the one that's closest to me. Is well, I'm going to join Dead Game Society. I'm going to try to push in for Origins, trying to get some more of that stuff out there.
Awesome. Yeah, well, we will be at Origins, I think, in 2 years. Because that's my anniversary, so I can't go to Gen Con that year because the wife kind of wants me around. But I can do Origins because it actually falls on our wedding anniversary. So it'll be the 10-year one. So, I mean, if it was like 7 or 8 or 9, I could skip it. But 10, I guess, is a big number for the ladies.
Yeah.
Right. Well, don't forget about CantCon.
What's CantCon?
I guess one remembers is going to CantCon.
That's one where you can't go.
Kansas City, I guess it is.
Oh, that
no,
one.
No.
Yes, that's coming up.
I'll post some info on our site.
That's okay, in October, cool. I believe. Chad will be going to that, and it's a smaller. It's kind of, I guess, as big as a little bigger than GaryCon, which is, you know, maybe 400 or 500 people go to that, or is it more? Colin, do you know?
I haven't been there, so I'm not sure. I think there's a couple hundred people maybe go.
Okay, so and we really want to hit some of the smaller cons too, because those are fun.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, and roll into town. I'll be dressed up as, you know, something. You know, I need something where I can wear a dress.
Oh, Matt's telling us that CanCon is in Kansas City, run by the Gamers Haven podcast.
Oh, great.
Oh, cool. That's a good podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. Hook up with those guys.
We can learn some lessons from them about running a con then.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Maybe.
All right, so you can go to dgsociety.com, is it, or is it .org? I forget.
.com or deadgamesociety.com. It depends how much you want to type.
All right, great. Thanks for coming on the show and telling us about the society and everything that's cool about you guys.
No, it's been fun. Hopefully I didn't, you know, kind of wander too much.
No.
I know you asked me questions. Did I answer them?
No.
Maybe next time. I can't remember.
Okay,
you know,
so we're right on task. Perfect.
Actually,
it's running around my head.
If you don't mind just hanging out when we go into the next segment, you can talk about some crossover games with us.
Oh, that sounds kind of great.
Okay. So let's head over to Table Manners now for the rest of the show.
Typical. Of all the evil creatures in the world, we like to find one with table manners.
And what, are you kidding me? I spent years cultivating the worst table manners on the planet.
Table manners.
So we're in Table Manners this week, and Michael is from Dead Game Society has stayed over. Colin had to go for various reasons. Michael's going to stay over and talk about some crossover games since he is a specialty person in this. No, I'm just kidding. He's just going to stay with us and chat. And we're going to talk about various games that we can cross over into Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. We've all done it as younger adults or kids, whichever case you want to take. So, Nick, have you done any crossover games back when you were playing in the day, when you got bored of playing D&D?
You know, it's funny you mention that. And I think, now, obviously, memory is selective and kind of hazy at times, but I do recall a friend of mine, his name is John, and we were figuring out this thing about, you know, in the DMG where it talks about Boot Hill and Gamma World,
right?
And we're reading through the descriptions there. It doesn't give you a whole lot, but I was really interested in Gamma World. I'm like, this sounds kind of cool, you know, just kind of a, you know, after the bomb kind of thing. And I just remembered that little blurb in the DMG spurred me to buy my copy of Gamma World, and I think I got it was the first edition.
Well, do you remember what the box looked like?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's got I got my books right here.
Okay.
The box was the four guys, one with like the tricorder, and the rest of them look like they're holding
sort of space spears,
space spear flamethrower things. Yes.
Yeah. I've got that box here. Well, I think that's the rule set that we're talking about carrying over, and it's a good place to start. Is in exactly those pages. So you know, for anybody that's following along in their Dungeon Master's Guide, it's page 112, where they specifically give some tables for how to convert Boot Hill and Gamma World stats and those types of things over. And actually, that particular Gamma World, no, it was the Boot Hill one, had been published in Dragon Magazine the same month that the Dungeon Master's Guide was released. And it's a good setup. And like you said, for me, it was the first time that I had ever heard of those other games, was reading about
them. Me too.
In the DMG. But I think, you know, for what we want to talk about today, we don't need to go into the specifics of how do I convert, let's say, you know, intelligence score to a mental strength score for Gamma World or any of those types of things.
So I can put down my pencil then?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I was trying to go through that a little bit to see if I could find a way to make quick and easy sense of it. But the fact is, I don't have a copy of Boot Hill. I do have Gamma
World. I'll grab one. I got it.
Okay, well then good. I mean, maybe you could talk a little bit about...
We'll just do it right now.
Yeah.
Well, this is kind of like a, like in the comic books, a what-if
scenarios.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, which is a lot of fun.
I used to love the what-if comics.
Yeah.
The what-if.
Yeah. Like, what if Spider-Man became bad and decided to kill the whole entire universe? Comics like that.
Or what if Spider-Man joined the Fantastic Four or something like that? Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, those are good. I mean, what if Henry Rollins fought Superman? Was there one of those?
No.
No, but there should have been.
It was only it was a Marvel comic.
Yeah. I mean, that would be my first thing, is I'd want to take somebody like Daniel Close or R. Crumb and put the superheroes in their worlds. But I mean, and that kind of is the thing, is you can set up some pretty straightforward one-to-ones, so you can take your characters and move them into Gamma World or Boot Hill. Now, if you want to go to Top Secret, it's going to be a lot different, because you don't have the system's not necessarily the same setup.
Yeah, it's a different game mechanic entirely.
Well, I mean, it's similar enough in that it is at a sort of a high level. It's still a class and level based type of thing, as opposed to, say, like a Cthulhu system, where you're entirely based on skills that increase only.
Right.
And, you know, Michael, throw me off where I'm, you know, getting this wrong about the way they're set up. But, I mean, what I would probably do in one of these kind of things is, rather than trying to necessarily take a one-to-one and make them look exactly like that, is to just kind of start from scratch, to go back and say, well, okay, if my character was in that world, what things do I have to bring over? The one thing I would not do, so let's say you've got to move into... You're going to go play a top secret game, all right? And you've got a courage stat that you need to come up with. I don't think there's really an AD&D mechanic or an AD&D ability that necessarily matches courage one-to-one. So, but what I wouldn't do is I would not roll for it. You know, if your character has already been rolled up, so if you're going to bring them over, it's going to be a lot more about making judgment calls and assigning numbers based on that.
How about if for courage you could take constitution and wisdom, add them together, and divide it in half?
That might work.
Because you figure courage is a mix of maybe your will, which would be wisdom, and then your physical... to not puke and be scared, so that's constitution. So take the two of them, add it up, divide it in half, boom, there's your number.
That's a good mechanic.
Nice and easy.
That's good. That's perfect.
There you go. Yeah.
For me, it would be more of the flavor of it, like rolling, you know, somehow Boot Hill characters wind up in a D&D game. I mean, and just the idea and in the story, I'd be more into the story, and you know, you can fudge the numbers as long as the story is, you know, fun and the players are enjoying it. So a lot of times I would just, you know, put certain things aside and just let's have fun.
Yeah, I mean, the exciting thing is right there. How did they end up suddenly in the Old West? The article I was reading that was talking about moving AD&D characters into a Boot Hill world had written this little intro where the players all suddenly find themselves, and it tries to describe the room that they're in, you know, in this wooden room with strange transparent coverings on the windows, and they had iron on their hips that wasn't swords, and they didn't know what to do. It's kind of fun when you watch the players try to not
understand something that they clearly do understand.
Sure. Right.
You know, how are you going to take your paladin and put him in front of a telephone in Top Secret and have the player not know what a telephone is?
Yeah.
Well, that's where you draw the line between player knowledge and character knowledge. This is where real role playing actually comes into it.
With an E.
It's like, so, you know, if they're, and I think this kind of genre mixing thing is good for the fact it really tests the player's skills as role players. When you talk about situations like that, they're going to have to, in a certain way, have a suspension of disbelief and just go with it what their character only knows. And they're
this is one of the advantages of the hobby, adventure gaming hobby, having been around for all these decades now and of younger players getting into it, is that you can actually, for some of the games, you can actually put stuff in there that really will be alien to your players. So put a rotary phone in, you know, put a CB,
player.
An A-track player, put in a CB radio.
Or a VCR.
Yeah, I mean, pull up some stuff. How about a
reel-to-reel?
Nice. Jinx.
How about a...
Yoma soda.
Even better, a typewriter.
Oh, there you go. I got one of those.
Yeah, just describe it. Don't even tell them you see a typewriter. Describe the thing that they're seeing. You know, like, or in the Old West, I mean, that's even better. How are you going to describe a player piano to some?
Or even a... one of those things, Morse code things.
Telegraph.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Here's like, well, you're talking like maybe the other way around. Like, you have characters from the Old West, and like in Boot Hill, and they somehow get transported to World of Greyhawk.
Mm-hmm. You know? Oh, that'd be awesome. Could you imagine?
I mean, now, like, you have to describe things to those characters that are relatively commonplace in the World Greyhawk fantasy campaign setting. Like, I don't know, like a wizard's tower and what a wizard does, you know?
Yeah. Or just for that matter, let's say you've got your Top Secret players and they go back and they suddenly have to figure out how to get the armor on and how to get on the horse while they're wearing the armor and still ride it.
Right, right.
You know, what was that film with Jean Reno where he ends up going through, he plays a medieval knight that comes forward through time? Anybody remember that one? The Visitors.
Yeah.
The Visitors. Ooh. You know, and it's just, you see all the moments where there's this medieval knight and all of a sudden he has to face indoor plumbing. You know, and he's like literally in there drinking out of the toilet because it's the cleanest water.
Yeah, but, you know,
there was also
that happens in modern times, too.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah, if it's Jean Reno at your house, you bet.
Was it another movie, Beastmaster, was like that, too.
Right,
and they spoofed on
second Beastmaster film, yes.
And they spoofed on themselves, and he was driving in the car, and he looked at the movie theater, and it said Beastmaster 3, the portal through time, or something. And he's like, huh? He looked at the sign, or something weird like that.
Yeah, or Happily Ever After.
Yes, that was
That's right.
That was a musical, good movie, I have to say that.
I mean, let's try that out. Let's try out, like, trying to describe something from another time. So let's say you've got the telegraph. So, you know, I'm going to be DMing this thing, and you guys are coming in, and I have to say to you, you know, you come in, and they're sitting there on the desk. You see a small rectangular object, and it has what seems to be a copper, maybe. Wait, did they have brass in an AD&D world?
Oh, sure,
yeah.
Okay, so then you see, like, so you can just describe it. You see some sort of a brass mechanism, and it looks like a lever. And sitting next to it, suddenly it begins to shake violently, and you hear a strange sound like you've never heard before coming out of it, and, you know, this thing starts shaking.
Sounds like a bunch of woodpeckers.
Yeah, so, like, imagine at that moment, you're not just thinking about transferring over the stats from one thing to another. You're thinking about all the ways that the players are going to react when something bizarre happens.
It's evil.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a magic item. The first thing your magic user better do is try to detect magic on it.
Right.
It could be a tinker.
Which, of course, will not work on anything in the entire Boot Hill world.
Or it could be a trap.
My God, it's a trap.
So. That's a good one. So, you know, for example, your thief would still be able to do find, remove traps.
Or safe cracking.
But,
yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, but the imagine the penalties, because all of a sudden none of these are traps that he's used to being involved with.
It's fun, and it really brings role-playing back into these role-playing games. And I mean, that's what, you know, we all want to do, especially with the Dead Game Society, is bring role-playing in. And doing these crossover games, you can really, really fire up the imaginations of the characters. I mean, I fear that most of role-playing games today, it's just about rolling dice and beefing up your characters. It has nothing to do with the actual story or, you know,
yeah, really,
all that stuff. So,
yeah, I mean, definitely, if a person has been spending a lot of time just trying to watch the stats climb up on their sheet, it's a good way to maybe shock them into a little bit of role-playing right there.
Right.
Is to
right.
just throw them into a different world.
Mm-hmm. Well, another thing I was... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, another thing I was just thinking about, like, when you talk about mixing these genres, like Boot Hill or Gamma World or Star Wars or what have you, there might be some things from that genre you're mixing into your game that you might like and want to keep. And one example that I could think of is, I remember not too long ago on dragonsfoot.org, it was a couple of years ago, I think. Somebody actually came up with a perfect idea if you wanted to use psionics in AD&D. I'm just saying. You don't have to use them. But it's like, yeah, I know psionics is like the redheaded stepchild of AD&D as far as, you know, things to use. But if you want to use
one of these days, I'm going to really properly get the psionics thing figured out. I'm going to play a game with it. I'm going to find out that it turns out to be awesome. And
well, here's the deal on that.
Like
somebody
Jedi
came
powers.
Up with the idea of something very easy. Use the Gamma World system to figure out psionics.
Really?
Just use the mental capabilities chart and like roll up three different mental abilities for your character, and there's your psionics for your character. And you base it off the Gamma World
like the
system.
Is that like the mental mutations?
Yeah, the mental mutations. Yeah.
Okay, got it. I could kind of see that. I mean, you've got
I'm trying to remember who did it, and I read it. I'm like, well, that's just brilliant. It's simple, and it's a system that could be easily ported into AD&D because of the write up in the DMG about interchangeability of the two systems. I'm like, wow, I might use that next time if someone wants to do psionics. I might use that. That's very cool.
Well, you know, one of the things that comes up sometimes when people are talking about bringing characters literally from one system into another is whether or not they'll be too powerful in the other world. So, for example, if a character brings back a gun with him, and I know you can run out of bullets and all that, but you know those type of things. If they bring back a working laser pistol or something, but you could offset that pretty easily with just the fact that the player or that the character just Whoa. Is so out of his element. That even though he's got these couple of things, like let's say that you have a Gamma World character that comes over and has some of these mental mutations, like, you know, dual brain or something, it sounds like just completely unbalancing. But then he's so out of his element that you could come up with a million penalties to offset that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well,
sure,
you know what? Like when you're talking like technological things, one thing that leaps to mind is the adventure Expedition at Barrier Peaks.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And when the adventurers, they go into the crashed spaceship and they find robots and blaster rifles and what have you, one of the things that, like you're talking at disadvantages, is the flow chart that they had in there. When you're trying to figure out these technological items, you're trying to figure out how to use this laser rifle, if you go through the flow chart with the die rolls and everything, you have a chance of blowing this thing up and you're going to take some damage.
Sure,
so
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, or it can degrade over time, you know, because it doesn't belong in this period. So,
right, maybe it only has like 20 or 30 shots. How are you going to recharge the thing? Well, once it's gone, it's gone. So there you go.
Well, we did one campaign bringing some future stuff back into AD&D. The great Joe DM.
The great Joe.
Yeah, he. I did this campaign. He made me make up a regular character from back then was the 80s. From the 80s, and we brought my super duper party van back into AD&D. And I remember we were driving around in the party van, and then it ran out of gas. So we figured out this solution by figuring using alcohol as the gas supplement until it blew the engine.
Right. And then what do you do with it?
And then we just left it.
No, it's good. You know, it's sort of a limited use artifact.
Yeah, yeah. But that's one idea you can do.
And that's how the apparatus of Kalash got there.
Yeah.
One of the things I'd really like to hear of people doing, I've never done it myself, but is you were talking before about the what if comic books.
Yes.
And it's to do that same what if, to bring a couple of characters that are legendary, not necessarily PCs, but a couple of good NPCs from different systems together. You know, so bring Billy the Kid and James Bond into the same situation.
Oh, it'd be an awesome convention game. 4-hour game, one shot. That's a great idea.
Ooh, for a one shot, you could have one where each player could pick one character from a different era. So you've got
Luke Skywalker.
You've got King Arthur, Luke Skywalker, Billy the Kid, James Bond.
James Bond, why not?
Are we?
Yeah.
Did we just make up a new Bill and Ted movie, or?
Why not?
Maybe. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great idea. James
definitely needs to be in one of the characters.
Bill and Ted's really stupid adventure now, or?
We got to do that one for Gen Con.
Yes, we do.
All right, we got to try this.
Should I write it? Do you want me to write that one? I think I can do that.
Oh, yeah. Let's get together.
What I went to school for, so.
What system should we base it on?
Let's do it.
GURPS!
No. All right, Nick, I'm disconnecting you from the call now for that.
Well, I mean, maybe a D20. I mean, that might be able to handle it.
I have to confess, I don't know a lot about the D20 system itself and its mechanics, but I've been thinking about this a lot this weekend because in my Skype game, I made what I think were some kind of bad decisions in terms of how people were handling whether they could do certain things.
Right.
And at one point, I even, forgive me, I rolled a D20 ability check. You know, and it upset me so much that I had resorted to that in this moment where I just didn't know what to do, that I was reading on a lot of different things that people had done, like how they'd handled their systems for resolving these things. Came across some good ones, but the point is that the whole issue of linear progression versus bell curve rolls and how different dice roll, it worries me that the D20 system seems to be based on a single mechanic, that it might be too restrictive for the different kind of things you'd want to actually do. You know, there might be a better way to do it using more of an AD&D type of mechanic and then bringing in all the things from different systems that make sense.
No, it would be a good system I could think of that would work for is Chaosium's basic role-playing.
I don't know anything about it. Chaosium's basic role-playing.
Yeah, it's what all their games are based off of. It's the Call of Cthulhu and...
Right, that's right. That is a... yeah, that's right. Don't they have a... where it's like... what is it called? Oh, I can't remember what it's called, where anyone could use it. You can use that game system.
I think they have a free PDF of it on their website that you can download and of their game system. And then they base all their systems off
of it. I mean, Margaret Weiss Games, they have a real standard system you can build a lot of stuff off. The D6. Traveler system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
D6.
Actually, the D6 system might actually work out the best for that.
Yeah.
Or maybe
up with something. I mean, I think this is a good kind of group project to figure out what system it would be. The most important thing, though, is going to be the story, anyway.
The story, absolutely. And, you know, because really, just roll the die. Whoever's running it will take care of all the fun stuff, you know, all the mechanics and everything like that. But I think it's a great idea. It'd be a perfect convention game. And that's what we do is I don't want to write campaigns, but I like short 4-hour adventures because I could write 10 of those and have fun doing it.
All right, so we got our plans. We got our plans for next time.
For low tech.
Wait, what was this? What was the topic?
Right,
we're mixing like a whole bunch of characters together.
Crossover topics, crossover characters, and
Did we introduce the Dead Game Society yet?
Yes.
I don't think we're going to talk about them.
That was...
I wouldn't.
It's about an hour ago.
Topic.
I was just reading the show notes.
Oh, boy. Okay, so... So was there any games that any of you guys actually took, like, say, the first edition system and made into your own game? Because I know we got bored a lot of games when we played it, and we actually made our own game out of the AD&D system. Like, we made up our own Western, because we didn't actually know about Blue Hill, so...
You know, someone should
know
do the
what
Planet
we
Apes.
Did. I know what we did was when we I bought the Gamma World rules. We and I got AD&D and Gamma World. Thunder the Barbarian. Woo-hoo!
Yeah,
you know.
Oh yeah, that's pretty much what you've got when you're playing Gamma.
I was there. I'm like, oh my god, Ariel, Ookla, ride. So
I'm sure
it was a blast. We did that for a while. We mixed the two. It was very very cool.
I mean, couldn't you basically just play Thunder the Barbarian with Gamma World rules and you're set?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but you don't have orcs then.
Just import. Yeah. I'm talking about
anything you want.
Actually taking the AD&D first edition rules, leaving them and modifying them so you can play another game that's totally not out there.
Oh, gosh, no.
So, for example, what do you mean?
Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, Planet of the Apes.
There we go.
Apes evolved from men?
Logan's Run.
That Logan's Tron.
Oh, that would be good.
Gilligan's Island.
I see that.
Logan's Run. That'd be awesome.
Logan.
Yeah, I actually was looking at a. I've never played this before, but there. I didn't even realize that there was a game based on. It's called Starship. Called Robert Heinlein's Starship Troopers.
Awesome game.
You've played it?
Yeah, I played the role playing game and the miniatures game.
So many.
I remember the miniatures game.
The miniatures game just came out maybe like 5, 6, 7 years ago.
I mean, this is the thing about, you know, now that I've been paying more attention with the Dead Game Society being on my mind, is going back and looking at all of these games that I missed the first time around. You know, like I picked up a copy of Star Fist from Steve Jackson Games recently, which is pretty fun. I got that Amoeba Wars game from Avalon Hill, and I just bought one that I've been wanting to play ever since it came out in the 80s, and now I want to play it even more because of the name, and that's Twilight 2000.
Oh, Twilight 2000 is awesome.
You know, so we can find out what it's going to be like in the year 2000.
They actually made a second game out of that. Twilight 2013 is the newest one that came out.
That one's actually not too bad.
I really want to. I just bought a copy of the box set, so if I can figure it out, that's one I really want to run for Dead Game Society at a convention because
That's a very very cool game. In fact, when that came out, it was right around the same time that the movie Red Dawn hit the theaters.
Ooh, Red Dawn's a good one to run with AD&D rules.
Well, there you go. Oh yeah, I mean. I was in a Twilight 2000 campaign for quite some time, and it is very, very cool. And just seeing how basically you're a bunch of people either in the army or a ragtag band of whoever trying to get back to the United States out of war-torn Europe. Mm-hmm. It's very, very cool. Just the whole concept.
I think that's the thing, is that whatever we try to set up, maybe we should really base this around an AD&D-like mechanic, since, first of all, what's this podcast about, right? But
it's about World of Darkness.
I think it's still, to me, the AD&D mechanic seems like one that would be the most flexible, that you could really push it without breaking the core mechanic, and you could really adapt it to any of those systems.
Yeah, that's what we used to do all the time.
I think you could do it. Yeah.
And if you write it up and, like, you know, do a hardcover out of it, you can, you know, really do it in the style of an old AD&D book.
Well,
the kitsch value.
That's good, because actually, as we've been working on the DM screen, I wanted it to look as original and official as possible. So I've collected all of the typefaces that were used by TSR from the 70s through the 80s. And I managed to, it turns out there's a lot of people that talk about that online. I found at least five different sources that told me every typeface that was used.
Yeah.
Turns out I actually owned quite a few of them because...
Yeah, like Century Gothic.
Yeah. But a lot of them from Linotype. I actually own the I have access to the Linotype library because of my work, you know, because I'm at a design firm.
Cool.
So a lot of these typefaces, it turns out, are really, really well-made professional stuff, and you can just make anything look like an old TSR now. So we can completely do that.
Yeah, and that's why I'm really into that idea of like when I design or make things, like we're doing this Call of Cthulhu setting, and so I want to make it look like an old Dynamite magazine from the 70s,
mm-hmm.
and really getting that feel, because you know when I want someone to hold, I want to, you know, not only are we in that particular genre, but we're also, you know it has ties to that, and that's why what your DM screen being authentic like that or feeling like that, it'll be awesome. I mean, you might even want to, you know, put in the print like worn edges, you know, that's already part of the you know, part of the design.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, the nice thing is too that the good thing about being 2010 is it's so easy now for us to actually publish this stuff.
Wait, it's 2010? Yeah.
You know, so in the year 2000, yes. What will happen?
Yeah, actually, it's funny because I was just in the 70s room, and I just stepped out into the 2000s, and I felt the tug.
The trail of smoke like, behind you.
Yeah, I was looking at my wacky pack cards while you guys were talking about whatever you're talking about, and then I was like...
But question is, did it take 1.1 gigawatts to get back? Gigawatts to get back.
21 gigawatts!
Yeah. Anyway, so we'll talk about Back to the Future another time. That'd be kind of a cool role-playing game, actually. Back to the Future.
Well, the thing is to actually start doing it, you know, and that's why, you know, like I said, we're writing this new Call of Cthulhu setting. I mean, this whole thing with the one-shot that Jason was talking about with, you know, bringing these characters in, I mean, it'd be a lot of fun. I mean,
yeah,
that's what we should do. Most of us are married, so our lives are over anyway.
Yeah, we're all settled. We're
good point. Good point. Good point.
Oh, you know, there's one last thing I just remembered. This isn't even a role-playing game crossover necessarily, but I'm a huge fan of Infocom. If anybody ever played their computer games,
Infocom?
Anybody remember them?
Infocom?
Infocom. They made all. They were they made what they called interactive fiction. You know, this is when computers really weren't powerful enough to do decent graphics. That's so right. I've got a few Infocom games that I've, you know, kept like, over the years.
Like Zork?
Zork was one of them.
Oh, okay.
They had
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was mm-hmm. one of those text-based games.
Wishbringer, okay, now I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Wishbringer, Planetfall, Suspect, Infidel, Leather Goddesses of Phobos. Any one of those could be turned into an amazing adventure.
Laser Shoot Larry?
Never mind.
Never mind.
What was that? Leather Goddesses of Phobos? I might want to look into that.
Yeah, let me pick up my pen again.
Yeah, Leather Goddesses of Phobos is one of the funniest games that I've ever played. And I have it right here, and I can start it up on my Apple II right now, but you guys won't be able to see that.
All right.
But, I mean, just for example, you know, their games, they were much more like role-playing games than computer games because the only thing it could really do was show text on the screen. So when I open up the box here, it comes with a whole bunch of different things like, you know, booklets and maps and everything else in it. So, but the point is they make some really good conversions if you wanted to bring those into an AD&D mechanic.
Awesome. All right, cool. Tell us what you think and what games you crossed over. We'd like to hear your stories. You can go to our forums, rfipodcast.com, and post up there your experiences, or rfistaff@gmail.com, and we'll read it there on the next show. So I think that's going to head us into the last segment tonight. Guys, I think that's going to put a wrap on the show.
Oh
yeah, it's time to head down the road.
Okay.
Great. So let's see, what do we have coming up for next week?
We have the Mad Irishman coming on.
Right, so that'll be fun.
And
some Mad Irishman, wonderful.
Well, we've been talking about people who make cool things and that type of stuff.
He's a maker.
Yeah.
People that aren't us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody
who does know about the Mad Irishman, I think, is a big fan of the stuff he does. He has made character sheets for so many different games. He's brought back a lot of stuff, and especially for what we care about, he's made perfect reproductions of the first edition character sheets and even improved on them a little bit and turned them into PDFs that anybody can use.
And has
some game design of his own, so he'll be a great...
Yeah.
He has a brother called Ticked Off Kelkdick Guy, I think.
Oh, man.
And the...
Nick, you're losing experience here.
I think the week after that is when we will have Jonathan from Epic Words as well. So,
you know what? He's really cool because I emailed him like you did for some changes, and he instantly emailed back, and he changed whatever I needed for my campaign.
Yeah, nice. It's a great site.
He was telling me all these different features he was thinking about putting. I asked him about a subdomain so it'd be easier for people to find your campaign as opposed to going to campaign/3221. And he said that he was working on getting subdomains so you can have like epicwords.com/whatever Jason's game or whatever we want to call it. So I think that'd be a kind of a cool idea to do that.
Very cool.
Very cool.
And it's really good for when we're talking about stuff from today, all the different systems we were discussing, because Epic Words actually supports dozens and dozens and dozens of systems. You can set it up, even if the system's not supported, you can set it up, you know, on your own. And he's very good about responding. So if somebody's playing, I don't know, Star Frontiers and wants a little bit of help with that, he's pretty good about helping you out.
Yeah. So epicwords.com, go there. Jason has a campaign there. Jason, what's the name of your campaign so people can actually search it and follow it if they want?
Right now it's called Hog's End.
Hog's End.
H-O-G-S-E-N-D, which is just because that's the name of the first town that they're in.
Oh, okay.
And we'll have to see about real campaign names, you know, as time goes on.
Mine you can find is The Quest for the Book of Sorrows is my campaign name. So, okay, that's going to put a wrap on the show, and if no one has anything else to contribute, Michael? No,
I'm
kidding.
No, I'm fine. Well, we're going to do my intro.
Thanks for coming on, Michael, and Colin, who did go. So, you know, anything else you want to, you know, tell us about on Dead Game Society, what you guys have planned in the future?
Well, like I said, we're doing these monthly games at Games Plus in Mount Prospect, Illinois, and we're going to be starting up the D20 Pro games pretty soon. I'm just going to test out some of the software, make sure it works, and then we'll have slots for six different people. You know, probably once or twice a month we'll be running Dead Games there. We got GaryCon coming up in March, and CantCon is in October. I think two of us will be up there for that, so... You know, that's all that's going on with us. You know, we're writing the Call of Cthulhu expansion thing. It'll be a free giveaway. We'll have it in PDF form, also in hardcover, to give away at conventions.
Awesome.
So, yeah, that's nice. Always trying to figure out.
There's another con that I haven't seen in a while, but I remember hearing about a year or two ago, and maybe Matt can look it up for us and tell us what happened to the online RPG con that they had. Did that ever not go?
Online RPG con? You mean like a con that people
only online
virtually?
Yeah, it was a virtual only con. It went off maybe 2 years ago, but I've never seen anything from it since then.
Somehow that makes me sad.
Yeah, surprised with everything that's going on that they didn't push
very well. That makes me sad.
it's like a virtual New Year's Eve. I just imagine all these people sitting in their rooms with a little hat and a little, you know, waving a
noisemaker.
Yeah. Whatever.
It is a little depressing.
Hey, you know what? You can't leave your house. At least you got something, okay?
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Actually... Can't or won't.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. I mean, you're right. It's a good point.
Yeah.
It's true.
All right. So not everybody can get out like us really cool people.
Yeah. You know, you just actually made me think, though. We should think about what we can do for Low-Tech Con for people who cannot travel to Low-Tech Con. There ought to be some sort of a virtual...
Low-tech way.
But that's not low-tech, though.
That's not low-tech.
That's okay.
Can we have webcam?
Exactly.
That's
not low-tech. We can set up a room with a projector and a webcam and a way for people who are unable to get there. Although I don't want to encourage people to not go. I clearly, I should think before I speak.
Yeah,
I'll try that.
Clearly, you should. Well, what we could do.
Shut up.
What we could do is we could take a really long string with a can on the end of it and stretch
that's
it.
That's what I was thinking.
String it all the way to Arizona.
That's low tech right there.
That's low tech, baby. All right.
Smoke signals.
No, that's too low tech.
That's why, yeah.
That's not even tech. All right, we can use CB systems. We can use the telegraph, you know, whatever.
We totally need a CB system at LowTechCon.
We gotta get a CB channel.
Matt's telling me it was called CyberCon. Yeah, okay. That sounds like a porn site. I'm sorry.
Wait, 2002.
Yeah.
Well, we'll check it out. Maybe is it going beyond it? Maybe we should support it.
CyberConRPGLife.com. Oh, wait.
Yeah, they just had GeekCon up in, I think it was in Wisconsin.
Talk about repetitive.
Yeah, I know. I didn't go, but a friend of mine went.
The redundancy department of redundancy.
Yeah, this guy, he doesn't look like a loser, but I think he is. He's all by himself, rolling his die.
Don't talk about Nick that way.
I'm sorry. I have to agree with Jason on this.
Why?
This is
fight
sad.
All right, let's get out of here before we get in more trouble. And
Wait one second. There's a guest list. How do you know those people are really who they say they are? I'm looking at the website right now. Guest list. They might as well just say Jerry Gygax was going to show up.
Wait, I see that this is from 2002, so I think we can mock it safely. But yeah,
I think.
So. Well, actually, you know, here's how I know that the guest list is real. I actually have no idea who any of these people. No, Steve Jackson. I know
Jackson.
Who he is.
But yeah. I could be Steve. Hi, I'm Steve Jackson. I'm going to go on your show.
Wow,
next
Steve.
Week, Steve Jackson.
I okay. love Car Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a particularly fun game.
Yeah.
The one you just
why'd you ruin it?
Let's.
That was part of the plan. Anyway,
we're wrapping up yet?
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Sorry.
Keep it original.
I went
keep
on a tangent. Sorry.
Control your show.
Yeah, keep it original, keep it old school, and don't talk to Michael.
That's good. I like that.
Come on. Right.
Bye, everybody.
Roll for initiative.